My name's Cynthia Wilson, and this message is for you. This podcast covers micro motivators to encourage you to act because small actions can make a big difference in your life. Welcome to episode 29. Today's message is plan a trip. I'm delighted to have my friend Amy Antrim, who is an affiliate of Academy Travel and has been planning travel for people to Disney and other destinations since 2019. Welcome, Amy.
Hey, how are you? Thanks so much for having me. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you for being here. I'm so excited to go through this conversation with you and talk about planning trips.
It is my thing I love to do, so I'm happy to be here and happy to answer whatever questions and hopefully get some people motivated.
Awesome.
Great.
So how far in advance should families begin planning a Disney vacation?
This is a great question. So Disney vacations can be done a lot of different ways, right? So there are people that will plan out maybe a year or so in advance. And then there are people that call me last minute and say, I just want to squeeze this in. So I think it depends on the type of trip that someone wants to go on. So to answer this maybe a little bit easier, let's say it's their first time, right? First time taking kids, and you really just want the time to kind of understand it and that kind of stuff. I would say at least about anywhere from 6 months to a year. And the reason to kind of do it so far out is because there's so many choices with Disney. And also with budgeting, you know, if you have something planned a year in advance and you know how much it's going to cost, it can help you with a lot of things, with maybe paying it off monthly and those type of things. And also just kind of getting the best choice for the resort that's going to fit your budget. So the closer that you go to the time frame, the less choices that you have because things are sold out. So I say, as a rule of thumb, if it's your first time, 6 months to a year, but you know, even 9 months to a year is helpful to make sure that you get the things that you really want.
And what's the best time of year to visit for fewer crowds and better pricing?
Sure. So September is the best as far as the least amount of crowds and as far as kind of lower-ish costing. The downside to that is, the reason for that is because people are back in school, and in Florida, it's also hurricane season. So it's not always very practical to go in September. So I know for me, I work full time, you know, outside of this job is in a college, and my husband is a high school teacher. So for us, September is a horrible time for us to go. So I think in telling people, you know, 9 months to a year ahead of time to book, really, I think it just depends on the family and taking a look at, do you have spring break times? Are you okay with taking your kids out of school if they're younger or older? My daughter next year is going to be leaving for college, so we have to work around her college schedule and that kind of stuff. So I think it's very family dependent on when the best time to go for somebody. But in general, certainly least crowds are always September. So if you have little ones and you don't mind taking them out of school, go in September.
Right. So you mentioned a little bit about the resorts and the different resorts that Disney has. What resorts offer the best value for families with young children?
Mm-hmm. So Disney resorts themselves come in three different categories: value, moderate, and deluxe. With saying that, all of the resorts on Disney property are extremely well taken care of. They're all extremely clean. They're all very family friendly. Budget-wise, of course, the value resorts would, you know, be the least expensive and the most budget-friendly, then moderate, and then obviously deluxe. With those, however, there becomes different accommodations with those rooms. Value resorts are smaller rooms. They don't have as many amenities on the property, such as, you know, restaurants, and not all of them have convenient transportation to some of the parks. So as you go up in category, you know, you find other things. So I think it's really also family dependent. Family of four going for like a, you know, maybe a week and wants to keep it out of budget, yeah, value resort is absolutely fine. But there's other people that are like, I have a family of four and my kids need to nap in the middle of the day, so I kind of do want to stay at one of those deluxe resorts because I want to be right near Magic Kingdom, like at the Polynesian or the Contemporary, because I want to be able to go back and forth. So there are some conveniences that come with, with the price. And I try to make sure I go through that with everybody individually so that they know, you're always going to have a great time. Like there's no lack of having a good experience, regardless of which resort you stay at. But there are different conveniences to the different, prices and the different, ranges of resorts that are there.
What do you think is the ideal trip length to fully experience the parks without burnout?
Oh, without burnout. I would say a full week. And reason being is I'm not a fan of doing a park on my day that I get there, right? I like to fly in and just keep that day to check into the room, relax. Unfortunately, airfare can be volatile if you have a delayed flight. I hate for people to, kind of feel like if my flight's delayed, the rest of my day is going to be ruined, right? So I like to build in, certainly at least that buffer of saying, let's say our vacation starts on a Sunday, right? So we go Sunday, fly in, hang out the rest of the day, whatever. And then there are four parks in Disney: Magic Kingdom, Epcot, Hollywood Studios, and Animal Kingdom. There's also the water parks that are there as well too. So for me, ideally, I like to have 2 days and then at least 1 day build in between, and then another 2 days. And then if you have to go on that last day, that's fine. But I like to try to build in, just a day to enjoy everything else that there is to do at the resorts. There's Disney Springs areas, there's restaurants at all of the different resorts, there's the boardwalk area. There's so many other places that you can go to. But again, it also depends on someone's budget. But for me, it would be fly in 1 day, 2 days of parks, take a day off, 2 more days of parks, your day to fly home. If you can build in an extra day, wonderful. But burnout is certainly an issue. By all means, you're doing a lot of walking. So, and a lot of getting up early and staying up late. So it depends on your family tolerance and how old your kids are and all of those different kind of factors that I always try to make sure we, discuss with everybody when we're doing our planning.
Thank you.
Yeah.
What is included in a Disney package and what's typically extra?
Yeah. Okay. The initial package is your room, right? So I always say, let's start with where are we at for a budget? Are we at a value? Are we at a moderate? Or are we at a deluxe? And let's take a look at the cost of the room. And then we'll add in tickets. And then there are the optional things that we do from there. So with tickets, we just kind of have the conversation. How many days do you want to go to the parks? Do you want to hit all four parks? Tickets can be what's called a base level ticket, which means you're just going into one park per day. Or you can have what's called a park hopper ticket, meaning that you can start in Magic Kingdom and then later on end up at Epcot. So I think those are the first two things that, we try to focus on. Then there are other things that based on what the person wants to do, how long they're going to be there, that we can build in as extras. One would be the meal plan. So Disney offers an opportunity to prepay for all of your meals while you're there. There's two different level options. So that's an optional thing. And for 2026, if you get a meal plan, kids between the ages of 3 and 9 are totally free. So that is a really good thing for next year. The other thing that you can add on if you want to is Memory Maker. Memory Maker is an unlimited photo package. It's $185 for the entire time you're there, and it gets you all your character pictures, all your pictures on your rides. There's photographers that are throughout all of the parks, and you can take unlimited pictures the entire time you're there. So that's a big add-on for a lot of people, especially for the cost. It's not much, and the pictures are phenomenal. They're very, very well done. You can certainly add travel insurance if you need to. If you don't have travel insurance through another party, travel insurance is pretty reasonable. It's $95 per adult, and the kids are free. That's the pricing as of now. With all of that, your transportation to all of the parks is completely included. So there's multiple modes of transportation that Disney has. So depending on where you're staying, it's either busing transportation, the monorail, the Skyliner, or even there's like some boats that will take you back and forth. And that's to all of the parks as well as Disney Springs. So with your package, you're typically getting your resort and your tickets, and then all of that transportation is included. And that would be the base price. And then from there, would you want the meal plan or do you not? And that just depends on what the person plans on doing and if they want to do sit down restaurants, if they do not, if they want to try to keep the cost down and just, order delivery from Amazon to their room to have like breakfast and lunches and stuff at the hotel, that's fine too. But then Memory Maker and the additional travel insurance would be the other things that people could add on.
Are there discounts available for any multi-day tickets or large groups?
Not necessarily for large groups unless it's done through like a big organization type of thing. Like you hear like the travel sports teams go down and, and that kind of stuff. But not necessarily for big groups that I work with. But there are certainly discounts throughout the year. There's different promos that are available. Like I was saying, next year, the whole promo is the free meal plan for our 3 to 9 year olds. And then every couple of months, Disney will release some sort of promo, and it varies all the time, whether it is X amount off of the room for a certain night's stay, whether it's, you buy 3 days of tickets, get the fourth free. There's all sorts of promotions that they put out. As you increase the number of days you go to the parks, the prices do go down. So if you're getting, 3 days of park tickets versus 4, there's a decent increase, but then as you go to 5 to 6 to 7, the increases become much less. So the more tickets you add on, the less it is each day that you're adding on.
Okay. So I know this is a question that everybody's going to want to know about. What is the best strategy for avoiding the long lines at the
Go in September.
rides?
So there's a lot of different ways to do it. If you're staying on property, which is the resorts that we're talking about, you get automatic early entry to the park. So if a park opens at 9 o'clock, you can get there half an hour early, and that's called rope drop. If you ever hear people, referring to rope drop, that means literally you're going at the time where they quote unquote drop the rope and you can walk into the park. That extra half an hour doesn't seem like a lot of time, but it really is, especially because you have to be staying on a Disney property to be able to take advantage of that. So that's a huge advantage of staying on property. And that gets you, 2, 3, 4 rides pretty easily before the crowds get, pretty intense. The other strategy is Disney does offer, it's an additional paid cost, but they are called Lightning Lanes. And what you can do is 7 days before you go, you can purchase a Lightning Lane, and it's about anywhere from $20 to $30 per person for the entire day. And you pre-book 3 rides. And those 3 rides, they'll give you an hour long time frame to come back to those 3 rides. As you use them, you pick another. So use it, pick another throughout the whole day. So usually you can, with that system, get anywhere from 5 to 10 rides that you're going to the front of the line for immediately. Disney also does offer what's called a Premier Pass, which is a little bit more expensive. It's like around anywhere from, let's say $200 to $500 per person. That gets you to the front of the line for, each ride once the entire time that you're there. So that's a huge time saver. And there are also VIP tours, which are pretty popular. So groups of 10 get a private tour guide that will take you on anything that you want. And you are kind of seeing some of the back scenes. A lot of people will do that for special occasions. I've had people do that for anniversary trips or, like big birthday trips or something like that. And those are certainly pretty popular.
Great. Are there any ticketing hacks or lesser known options for saving money?
A lot of clients that I work with will buy gift cards through when they are on sale. So I think it's Sam's Club and Target will do gift cards. So if your, $100 gift card is $90 or whatever. So you can buy your entire trip with gift cards. So that's a big savings that people do. I know when my kids were in school, we had a program that was called Scrip. That was if like you purchase gift cards, you would get a percentage back on your tuition. So we did that. We paid for almost our entire trip with that and got like a ton of money back on our tuition. There is a Disney credit card that you can get, which was, as you're purchasing Disney things, you can get Disney rewards. Surprise, surprise, I have one of those. And I think the other thing too that I just try to tell people is you don't, yes, your final payment is due 30 days before you go, but if you need to budget it before then, that's completely fine. You can do incremental payments as you go. So not necessarily a saving money strategy. But definitely just so it's gradually and you can kind of get used to, let's this is what I'm going to put towards it each month so that, kind of doesn't all hit at the end. And then I always, for me, and then going back a little bit to the meal plan's key for me because I want to be prepaying for my food. I do not want to have that cost while I'm there. And that to me is it's extremely well worth it for what's included in it. And it just gives you the option ahead of time to know that I'm not getting hit with a huge bill for food at the end. I've already prepaid for these things.
So if you do the prepayment of the food, what about tips?
Tips are not included. Great question.
Okay.
Yeah, tips are not included.
So since we've been talking about food and meal plans, how far in advance should dining reservations be made?
Yes. All right. So 60 days before your trip starts, your advanced dining reservations open up. And they open up at 6 o'clock in the morning. And just FYI, if you have a Disney planner like myself, guess what? You don't have to wake up at 6 o'clock in the morning. I'll do it for you. So, and what I do with my clients is a couple of weeks before that 60-day mark, we start to kind of try to map out the trip of like where you're going to be, right? So let's say day one, you're going to be in Magic Kingdom, right? So we get there on the Sunday and Monday, we're going to Magic Kingdom. All right, well, what restaurants would you want to try? And I give people a list ahead of time. These are my favorites, but the internet is a rabbit hole of Disney things. So you can always find opinions on whether people love or hate a thing. And so 60 days before, we make dining reservations. And it's actually not paid 60 days ahead of time. What happens is, if meal plan or no meal plan, all you do is you put it down with a credit card hold. You just hold it with your credit card. You're not advanced paying. There are a few restaurants that do advanced paying just because of their popularity, like the Cinderella's Royal Table, which is the one that's right inside the castle in Magic Kingdom, for example. If you're not on the meal plan, you would prepay for that. Everything is refundable or cancelable up until 2 hours before that reservation on the day of. So let's say you booked it 60 days ahead of time. And then that day you get there and you know what? You're just not feeling it. Everybody's not hungry yet. So we're not going to go. As long as you cancel it 2 hours before you go, you're totally fine. If you do not, it's that why you give that credit card hold is it's a $10 charge per person on the reservation that you would get charged. I've never had that happen because people know to cancel it. So, but yeah, but 60 days before you go, that's when you can start making all those dining reservations for character meals, for any kind of specialty dining, really anything that you want.
Are there any hidden gem restaurants or snacks that most guests miss?
That might be a total other podcast. But yes, I have certainly my favorites. I'll mention a couple. In Magic Kingdom, one of my favorites is the spring roll cart. It's as soon as you go into Adventureland, it's just this like tiny little stand, and they have these cheeseburger spring rolls. Quite possibly one of my favorite snacks in all of Disney. You have your standard stuff, your Mickey pretzels, all of that other kind of stuff. In Epcot, I don't know where to get started. The World Showcase in the back of Epcot, literally, which that's where all the different countries are featured, has, different snacks that are traditional to those countries. So I love to kind of just walk around in Epcot and just go in and out. One of my favorite places, there is a in the Germany Pavilion, there is a little store that sells like caramel popcorn and then all of these other types of caramel desserts. Absolutely fantastic. Also in Epcot, there's usually festivals throughout the year. So I just came back from going down in October and we were at the Food and Wine Festival. So there are just stands throughout the entire park that just have small plates so that you can be doing a whole lot of, just sampling the entire day. In Hollywood Studios, one of my favorites is stopping in Oga's Cantina. You do need to have a reservation for it, but Oga's is the Star Wars bar. And there's a couple of really, really good appetizers in there, which are wonderful. There's also the Baseline Tavern in Hollywood Studios, which has a gigantic pretzel, the size of your head, that my son will make sure that we get every time we go. Animal Kingdom has a ton of stuff. Again, kind of like in Epcot, a lot of those like little stands that you can go to. The Harambe Market is pretty popular. And Yak and Yeti, which is one of the sit-down reservation restaurants, has like a little stand-up bar where you can get some food at the front too, and that's also very good. So I could go on and on and on. Oh, last one I have to mention, the cake shop. This is new. It's on Disney's Boardwalk, and there are slices of cake that are bigger than your face. Every flavor is amazing. But I just came back from there and we had these raspberry bars that were there. They were like a kind of like a shortbread bottom with this raspberry jam and then like a crumble topping. I brought four of them home because my daughter and I love raspberry bars, and they were the best I've ever had. And I will be going back there the next time I go for sure.
Awesome. Thanks so much for that insight.
Absolutely. I
Well,
could again, anyone needs to talk food at Disney, I am happy to do that anytime.
how do you help families prioritize attractions based on age or interest?
Yeah. So early on, I try to have a conversation with everybody about, okay, what ages are your kids, but also what height are your kids, right? You have a 4 or 5 year old that might be on the smaller side or on the larger side. I mean, like taller side, right? Or, you know, someone who gets motion sickness or who does not. So I always try to, like, early on just say, like, if the kids know about it or if they do not know about it, that's a different thing. But maybe watch a few YouTube videos. Just get a feel for what the rides are going to be like and kind of tell me, you know, also like if your kids are shorter, right, and they're not going to meet the height requirement for the ride, I don't want to get anybody upset by saying you have to go on this ride and then they're an inch short, right? So I try to have those conversations with people early on so that we can kind of gauge what their priorities are. So for me, like I get pretty motion sickness. So like Guardians of the Galaxy, the Guardians ride that's in Epcot is probably the most popular ride now in all of Disney. I have been on it once and I will never go on it again. My son, on the other hand, will go on it nonstop 24 hours a day and be completely fine. Me, it didn't agree with my balance, like, and my vertigo issues. So I think it's really first kind of understanding, like, what are the ages of the kids? What are their tolerance levels? Do they like thrill rides? You know, some people are not. And then we kind of go from there. Let's say, all right, let's prioritize, you know, thrill rides over not thrill rides. And then I just really try to go by lines as well too. So there are certain rides like the teacups in Magic Kingdom. Never a really long line for the teacups. You can get on them pretty easily. Peter Pan's Flight, not so easy. It's one of the most popular rides in all of Disney. So that would be a great ride if you have non-thrill seekers who are younger kids, go on that first thing during those extra magic hours. So that's what I try to plan with people. Let's prioritize based on age of kids, what your tolerance is, and then how long the lines are going to be.
Great. How do you advise clients to balance spontaneity with structure?
Oh, I am a big fan of this. There are some people who have sent me spreadsheets, you know, of do you think this, or I've seen spreadsheets online, like, do you think this is realistic? And my first question back to is, did you plan time to like go to the bathroom, you know, because like that's going to need to happen, you know? I think that it has to be a balance of planning and spontaneity because you're going to miss things. Like, you, if you go to Disney for the first time, or your second time, or your third time, you're not going to do everything. It's just not going to happen. There's too much to do in all of the parks, and you'd have to, like, you don't want your kids to be miserable. You don't want your kids at the end of the day to be dragging and, you know, and whatever, just, you know, not having a good time at it. So I try to talk with people, like, when we're having that conversation about rides, what are the things you absolutely want to do? All right, let's plan those in. And then let's go with the some of the ones that, hey, these are probably really good ones that you should get onto. And if these don't happen, don't panic. And guess what? If something on your top list doesn't happen, that's okay. Like, it's not the end of the world. You've still had a wonderful time. You know, so that's, if you're having a bad time in Disney, well, I don't know. It's probably not for you. You know, like, it should be a, you know, yes, it's going to be kind of an intense type of thing, and you want to make sure you get the most of it. But just take the time when your kids are tired just to stop and grab a snack. Or, like, hey, there's a parade that went by. We didn't realize it was happening. Stop and watch it, you know? So I am not the planner for anyone who wants to make sure that every minute of their day is planned, because I just don't find that to be realistic. And I also don't want to set anybody's expectations up to be beyond what they can really manage. Epcot's a huge park. It's just a really, really physically big park. It's hard to get to all the things and get in everything. Magic Kingdom is the smallest park, but it has the most rides. It's incredibly difficult to get on every ride. Rides break down, that happens as well too. So you have to have like a decent enough plan, but still a go with the flow kind of attitude. One thing that I really like to tell people is like when we're going, like right before they go, we kind of look through the app and that kind of stuff. And the app has a map on it. So what I try to tell people is once you get off a ride, let's say you don't have a lightning lane planned for a little bit, or you have a little bit of time to kill before your lunch reservation, look on your app and it's going to show you the park and it's going to show you the wait times for everything that's around you and in the whole park. If there's something with a 5 or 10 minute wait, go on to it. Even if you don't know what it is, who cares? You're in Disney. It's not going to be bad. Just go real quick and, hey, we didn't expect to do this, but it was only a 5 minute wait. So why not? Right. So I try to tell people also, and that kind of helps with all the walking as well, too, so that you're not going from, side to side of the park. Just see what's open that's next to you. Oh, we're walking past Pirates of the Caribbean. It's only got a 5 minute wait. Let's go. Didn't expect to do it, but why not?
Great. Are there any nighttime shows or parades that are truly unmissable?
Yes, certainly at Magic Kingdom. Magic Kingdom always has like an ending of the night fireworks show. It changes depending on the time of the year. Typically around, 9, 10 o'clock at night, that is certainly just an amazing show, regardless of whichever time that year of the year that's there. My family, if they're ever listening to this, we have a big argument in of what is the best Epcot show that has ever happened. And there used to be one that's called Harmonious. But people thought like the big barges on the water took up like too much spot. So now it's been taken over by the show called Luminous, I think it's called. So my family always jokes around that Harmonious was better than Luminous. But anyway, I digress. That's a very wonderful show. Great, like nice music to it. Animal Kingdom does not have nighttime shows, obviously. Animals, fireworks, we're keeping those away, making sure that the animals are safe. And then the big one in Hollywood Studios is Fantasmic. So Fantasmic is a big water amphitheater show. So you're kind of in a semicircle. It's on the water. There's some like floats that go past it. And in the background, there is like lots of like water projections and like film projections that come like up on the water, like as they're like it's coming up out of the ground. So it's really nice set to music. So those are the big ones that I would say that people should make sure they hit.
Awesome. So, what services are available for guests with disabilities or sensory sensitivities?
So Disney has Disability Access Services, so DAS for short. And people who qualify for DAS, what happens is 30 days before your reservation opens up, you schedule a call with the Disney cast members in the DAS office. And it's a very short video call. So let's say it's a parent calling for a child with, like a sensory issue or whatnot, or maybe someone who has autism. What you do is you call. The child does need to be present only very briefly. It's really just to verify that the person is a person, right? So I, as the parent, would call. I would have my child kind of waiting. The cast member would go like, hi, Susie, how are you? Then the child goes away. Then the parent just has a conversation about why the needs, why the person wouldn't be able to stand in long lines and deal with that. Once disability access gets approved, what happens is it becomes very similar to the lightning lanes, but you don't have to pay for it, obviously. So you go into the park and you pick a ride, and based on the current wait time of that ride, they'll give you a time to come back. Maybe it's within 20 minutes, maybe it's in within a half an hour, and you go straight to the front of the line. After you are off that ride, you pick another, and it goes on through the rest of the day. There also are quiet places throughout the parks that Disney has just, kind of off to the side. So I always try to talk to my clients about where those places are and what might be even like best times of the year to go without, without a lot of crowds. And then all of the lines, the Disability Access Service used to be available for people with like mobility issues, but they have changed that. All of the lines are now accessible. So if there's a mobility issue, the person would, go in wheelchair or scooter or whatever it is. And then there is an area where if the person needs assistance to transfer onto the ride, they can transfer. And there are a good amount of rides that actually have, the wheelchair that can go directly onto the float or onto the ride. But most people for most rides would be able to need to transfer. If there's any shows, there's always disability services, like disability seating areas for the person as well as their family members as well too.
Great. How can solo travelers or couples make the most of a Disney trip?
I th think very easily because they don't have to worry about all the kids and their opinions, right? I love going on an adult's, Disney trip. That's the one I just came back from. And I'm going on a solo trip in December. So for me, kind of making the most of it is really doing whatever you want and not having as much of an agenda. So my last solo trip that I did, I went last October. And I went on, Tiana's Bayou Adventure just by myself. I was just like, this is phenomenal. And I just took my time and walked around Epcot. Those were the two things that I did. And I honestly didn't wait for any of the bigger rides because I had been on there. For couples, like I think sometimes it's nice, it's much easier to get dining reservations for two people, even at a last minute. And we talked about, that 60-day mark is just so that you can get the best times, but people cancel and that kind of stuff. So if you have smaller parties and it's a couple, it's kind of easy last minute to book a trip and and go down and have a little bit more go with the flow. The last trip I did was for my sister-in-law's 40th birthday. We went down in October. She really loves Hansen and she like Umbop Hansen, right? And she wanted to go see Hansen in the Epcot, like it's called Eat to the Beat concert. So we did a dining package, went to the Mexican restaurant and then got tickets for the show for Hanson. So it's just kind of fun. You don't have to worry about putting on the teacups and that kind of stuff. You're just doing the thing you want to do as adults.
Awesome. Are there adults only areas in Disney?
There are a few restaurants, a few bars in Disney Springs. There are a couple of places, like a couple of restaurants and that kind of stuff. Not as far as the rides or anything like that. Certainly all the parks are open for everybody, but some of the restaurants later at night have that. And then there are a couple of places like that will be like an adults only hot tub, that kind of stuff. I can't say that it's always enforced sometimes with some of the pools. But yeah, most of the restaurants have the bar section, which can be for just for adults.
Okay. Are there anything that travelers should know about parking, rideshare, or public transit?
I think so. Your transportation when you get into the Orlando airport is not included with your reservation. To me, the quickest way to get to your resort is by using an Uber. So that's what I do for rideshare. Once you get to the resort, all your transportation is included. We have had times, where we're going, let's say we've been staying at the Caribbean Beach Resort, which is on the Skyliner, right? So that's easy access to get into Epcot and to Hollywood Studios. But we're going to the Polynesian for dinner at Ohana. And we could take a bus to Magic Kingdom and then hop on the monorail and go over there, but we just don't feel like it. So we'll just use an Uber and, 10, $15 and super easy. They'll drop you right off. I will say with rideshares, it's great because at every parking lot that you go into, they will make sure that you are coming in and out and they'll ask the guest name and if you have a dining reservation. So it's nice and secure as well, too.
Great. What are some common mistakes that first-time Disney travelers make?
I would say, like you asked earlier, burning out and not leaving enough time. Now, there are some times that people want to go down and on purpose make it a shorter trip just so they can get the feel of it. And they don't want a full week the first time. They're like, we just want to go get an idea about it and that kind of stuff. But I would say not leaving enough time, like for rest. And with that, kind of what you were talking about with the other question of, like planning every minute, not leaving enough time during your day to just go with the flow. You need to have a balance, like just really for everybody's like mental well-being. You don't want to, let's say you have younger kids, you know their boundaries, you know their limits, and you want to make sure that it's still an enjoyable experience. Kids are getting super cranky at night and that kind of stuff. You just got to call it a day. It is what it is. You're still gonna have a good time. You know, you don't have to push through and get everything done to make it a magical experience. Still gonna be a wonderful experience, even if you didn't get onto that one last ride. So take it easy on yourself.
Great. Which resorts offer adjoining rooms, suites, or villas ideal for extended families?
So most of the deluxe resorts all have some type of one bedroom or two bedroom or even three bedroom, suites with booking ahead of time. And if that's what someone wants, those are things that go pretty quickly. So that is a book it as far in advance as you can type of thing. There are some resorts, even value resorts, that have suites in them for families of six. So let's say it's like the grandparents going with a family of, like with one child or something, that would work. And if you have a family, let's say it's a family like two adults and three kids, because the kids are outnumbering the amount of adults, you can guarantee connecting rooms in that situation. I will go often, like it's my family with my two kids. So, my husband, me, my two kids, and then my mom will come with us. Well, because the adults outweigh the kids, they don't guarantee connecting rooms, but we can put what's called a travel with number on there. And they do a very, very good job of trying to get you as close as possible. You know, for every 10 times that we go, I don't want to tell you how many times I've really been there. You know, 9 times out of 10, my mom is in the room right next to us. Which my daughter loves because then that means she gets her own bed. And, I don't know how my children both get their own beds, but that's totally fine. It's okay. So the most of the deluxe resorts.
Great. Are there accommodations with kitchenettes or laundry access for longer stays?
Yes, so those 1 and 2 bedroom suites have those. And then all the resorts still have laundry service. So we've done longer stays at like a value resort, and they're, just the coin operated machines are there as well too. Some of the resorts as well too. I think the deluxe resorts have laundry service as well too, if you have some sort of need like that.
Great. What attractions are universally appealing across all age groups?
I would say probably some of like the classic Disney attractions, although. If my son heard this, he would completely disagree, but like it's a small world. My son refuses to go on that ride. But to me, that is like your quintessential, universal kind of Disney ride. I think a lot of the shows as well, too, like the Lion King show in Animal Kingdom, the end of the night kind of shows we were talking about, like some of the firework shows, like Fantasmic and that kind of stuff. There's a ride in Hollywood Studios that's called Toy Story Mania. That's like it's a virtual reality ride where you're like, it's almost like playing like carnival games, but like electronically. That's a pretty classic, like family friendly ride. Mickey and Minnie's Railroad, which is another one that's like on a trackless type of system. So there's quite a few. I would say certainly a lot of the shows appeal to, multi-generational families. And then some of those classic Disney attractions like Peter Pan or Haunted Mansion or Jungle Cruise is actually probably one of the biggest ones. Jungle Cruise is a big boat that holds about 20 or 25 people, and it goes through and it's a lot of dad jokes and that type of stuff. So that's usually a pretty popular one for families and multi-generational families.
How would you support families in balancing individual autonomy with group cohesion?
I think this is one of the reasons that people call me and don't book with their families by themselves. I've had lots of friends call and they're like, I know how to book Disney, but I don't deal with my family. So can you do it? I'm like, yeah, sure, no problem. It's hard, right? Like, I try to tell people, especially if you have like taking, like, let's say there's grandparents with, three children who are married and all have grandkids, right? And the grandkids can be like, one family's their kids are a little bit younger, like 2 and 3 years old, and the next one are like, preteen, like, 9, 10, 11, and then you have like some teenagers in there, right? So I say either part of the day or one of your days, like let's identify some things that everybody wants to do. And let's make sure we schedule those. So, for example, in let's say we're starting our day in Magic Kingdom, let's all have breakfast together at, wherever we want to have breakfast. And then let's go on a few rides together that we know everybody wants on and can go on regardless of their age. Jungle Cruise is a great example. Holds, big boat, holds a lot of people. Pirates of the Caribbean is right next to it, so we can all go on that. And then maybe like one other thing. And then maybe it's like lunchtime. And then, all right, let's separate. Let's get the older kids to do what they want to do, the younger kids to go on the things that they want to do. And then maybe let's like meet back up for the fireworks. So, and then, or maybe it's just different days, so like everybody's going to go to Magic Kingdom the one day and we're going to kind of stick together for most of the day. But the next day, this family's going to go off to Hollywood Studios while this family goes off to Animal Kingdom. And each reservation can be built separately like that. So I actually work with quite a few families that have that kind of planning. And, at least try to like through their whole trip, maybe if their trip is a week, like three dinners together or, three meals together and a couple of days in the parks together, and then separate out so everybody kind of gets the best of both worlds.
Yeah, that's great.
Yes, I would definitely say that is probably one of the reasons that larger families call me the most, so that I can be the mediator and saying, this is what we're going to do together, and then this is what you guys are going to do separate. And I love it because that's how my family is. We have, the grandkids and my family for my mom range from the age of, 2 to 19. So it's always fun.
What's one piece of advice that you give to every client that surprises them?
Pack a portable charger. You always have to have a portable charger. You're on your phone a lot. I don't know about one that would surprise people, but maybe just like by probably my biggest, piece of advice, and we've talked about it a little bit, is you're not going to get everything done. It's just not going to happen. And be okay with that. Be okay with the fact that, your first trip, you are not going to get everything that you want done. And I'm pretty honest about that. I don't want to set up anybody's expectations to say like everything on your list is going to happen, because something's going to happen. Someone's not going to feel well one day. A ride's going to be closed. So I just try to keep it realistic as possible with people. Yes, there's a ton that you can get done and a ton of planning that you can do. And if you want to have things planned down to the, not necessarily to the minute, but a good outline of your day, you really can. But probably my piece of advice that I just think that I think most people do understand, but is just, it's not all going to happen, and that's okay. You will still have a good time. And to take those times to just let the spontaneous things happen. And some of those are the best things that happen. You're like, I didn't know about this show. Great. Went in and, something happened. My daughter and I were in Animal Kingdom one day, and we were walking over. We just stopped because we wanted to go to Starbucks, and we're like, okay, let's go get our iced tea. And we were walking, and there was a character meet and greet, and it was with Doug from the movie Up, like the dog. And we just were like following him out. She's like, that's Doug. I was like, hey, he's going to go in line right there. So we just kind of went right first and had a random character meet and greet, So I love when those kind of things happen. I think they're some of the greatest memories that really that can be created too.
That's awesome. I want to go back to a food question because I
Oh
forgot to
yeah,
ask it
absolutely.
earlier. So,
Anytime, anytime.
yeah. So, are there allergy-friendly or plant-based options across the parks?
There absolutely are. Yes. So one of the members of my family, my extended family, has celiac. So we are always looking for gluten-free options. Every restaurant has an allergy menu. When you make your advanced dining reservations, you can indicate that as well too. And when you check in, they will also ask you if you have an allergy. And I would say Disney is absolutely outstanding with it. My son has a mushroom allergy. He will not even want to eat a mushroom. This is not a big deal, but literally every time I'm like, hey, he has a mushroom allergy. And they're like, okay, hold on. Everything comes out with an individual, like it's marked that it's the allergy food with like a toothpick with like a little flag on it. The breads come out separately and individually packed. I don't have any allergies personally, but I have lots of, members of my family that do. And I think Disney does a really, really excellent job of making sure that they come out. The chef will come out if you have like any special questions. They'll make alterations to, to menus and make sure that they point out to you if it's a buffet or whatnot, like they'll have someone walk with you and show you exactly like what is gluten-free or what has, whatever allergy the person has. And if anything needs to be made special, they'll make it in the back and bring it out to you. So yeah, I
Great.
think it's pretty well done.
That's awesome. All right. Based on your personal experiences at Disney, what are the things that you say are not to miss?
All right. So let's start with Magic Kingdom. Magic Kingdom for me as a park is one that you just don't miss. To me, it's the quintessential Disney. For me, my when I'm in there, I must go on rides are always the Haunted Mansion. Love Haunted Mansion. I just love the classic, attraction of it. I love Big Thunder Mountain, which is one of my favorite roller coaster rides, and it doesn't actually make me motion sickness. I love Tiana's Bayou Adventure. It's a great ride. And I'll go with kind of an underrated pick, Monsters Laugh House. Monsters Laugh House is a interactive kind of theater show. And they'll put people on the screen from the crowds. And, just they'll say, hey, look, it's that guy. And that guy's buying everybody pretzels after the show. And they'll show somebody's face, right? And it'll be interactive. They'll ask kids like in the crowd some questions. So that is to me my Magic Kingdom ones. And there's a lot more, but those are my highlights in Magic Kingdom. I'm not a Space Mountain fan. I hate to say it. Space Mountain's too like it. I'm old, so like it hurts my back. But a lot of people, do like those classic kind of roller coasters as well too. Epcot. I'm gonna say Turtle Talk with Crush is an underrated, don't miss it attraction. It's kind of like that Monsters Laugh House. It is a very small little attraction that Turtle, like a Crush from Turtle Talk, comes out and is like doing an interactive show with kids and asking questions and that kind of stuff. I've never not been there and just busted a gut laughing. It's hilarious. Guardians of the Galaxy is the big one in there. I think Spaceship Earth, which is the ride that's through the big, Epcot ball, is really, really big. And Test Track is also certainly one of my favorites as well too. And don't miss Living with the Land. Living with the Land is a small little, like it's a small world kind of boat ride that takes you through this garden type of experience. I've actually done the behind the scenes tour on it. It's phenomenal. Hollywood Studios, if you're a Star Wars fan, do not miss Rise of the Resistance. That is the big ride that's in there. And if you're a Toy Story fan, Slinky Dog Dash and Toy Story Mania are the big ones. Lots of people would say Tower of Terror. I'm going to go on record and saying I've never been on Tower of Terror. It's a motion sickness thing for me. That's why. But it is certainly a not miss for most people. And then in Animal Kingdom, I say absolutely do not miss the safari. The safari takes, it's a big like jeep ride, like through the back areas. You can kind of see all the animals. I like to go in the morning. I think they're kind of most active then, but there also is like a safari at night as like an extra, that's like an extra added thing you can have on. So those are some of my don't miss things.
Awesome. So we've talked a lot about Disney today, but I know that you also book travel for a lot of other places for
I do,
other families. So can you tell us a little bit about some of those?
Yeah, sure, absolutely. So I started as a Disney travel agent. I started in 2019. This is just going into a little bit of the history of me becoming an agent. And that's what my company at Academy Travel, like that's where we start with that and Universal as well too, to have a lot of people that have gone to Universal. Oh, that's probably a question that I get a lot too, is like, where's the Harry Potter stuff in Disney? Hold on, two separate companies. So and we'll get there. So I started booking Disney and Universal, Disney cruises and that kind of stuff. And then my company has what's called Rest of the World. So for me, I had a lot of, my kids are in their teen ages now. So when I was taking them, they were younger. And a lot of the families that I first started to plan for, their kids started growing up and they're like, hey, do you book cruises or do you book, this or that? And I'm like, meh, I guess I can. So I just started getting more requests for it. So I was like, let me do this training for Rest of the World is what we call it. And that led into a lot of, all-inclusive resorts, cruises. And then like this past summer, like my family did a huge trip to the West Coast for, we did Disneyland, California, and then we went out to Hawaii. We went to the Disney property there. We switched islands. So I think the big things for me that I have branched out into are certainly all-inclusive islands, lots of stuff in the Caribbean. I've been to Turks and Caicos, Antigua. I've been to Curacao. I book a lot of people for Punta Cana. Certainly, very, very upsetting of what has happened in Jamaica recently with the hurricanes. I've unfortunately had to move some trips from there. A lot of people in Mexico. Cruises, I've done Alaskan cruises. I have a person going soon on a Panama Canal cruise. And then I just do a lot of personalized itinerary for people. So I helped a good friend of mine with a quick trip to New York City, who hadn't been there. So just trying to like pick out some fun restaurants and stuff to go to there. I have a person I'm working with now that they're just doing a weekend in Chicago. My family loves baseball, so we're trying to see all the baseball stadiums across the country. So I love planning baseball trips for families. I think it's most important too for any travel agent that if someone asks me a request and I'm not comfortable with it, I want to refer them to someone that's going to help them out, better than I can. I can plan anything, but I might not be the best agent to do that. So I just had someone, reach out to me and say, "I want to go to Europe." Great, but I can certainly book it and I know it very well and I've, been all over Europe, but I don't book it enough to make sure that I'm the best for you. So I would certainly refer you to another agent that I know that I can trust and that would, just better serve the person. I think that's one of the things whenever anyone's trying to find a travel agent is ask them what their experience is. I can book anything, but I want to make sure that I'm going to make it a good experience for someone. So if I don't feel I know it enough, I will either get help with doing it or just have them work with another travel agent because I just don't think that's fair to the client.
Sure.
Yeah. So if anyone wants to go to Hawaii, I highly recommend it. That was my last summer vacation. It was my husband's bucket list. And I'm working on a few personalized itineraries for it. I will not make you swim with the sharks like I did my children. I'm not kidding you. Both my children swam in a shark tank on the side of a boat. We had an absolutely amazing time. Hawaii was absolutely gorgeous. Turks and Caicos is a beautiful, beautiful island. And direct flights out of Philadelphia for any of your Philadelphia listeners. Any of those islands down there. There's just some really, really beautiful properties and just nice times to get away at all-inclusive resorts.
Yeah. So I am just looking for my 50th state, which is Hawaii.
Yeah.
So we'll
Get
see
on.
how that comes about soon, hopefully.
So
And
my husband, it was his 50th birthday, not to give away his age. He's 50 now. And my brother's 50th birthday. And my husband has a goal of seeing all 50 states. He has six left now. So Hawaii was one of his big ones that we had to check off. So it was a bucket list trip. And listen, it's pricey for me, for people who are doing those kind of bucket list trips, plan in advance and know your budget and know that it's going to be a longer time away and that kind of stuff. So when you're going to Hawaii, I got you covered. Not a problem. I love seeing those personalized itineraries.
It's my last one of the
Fantastic.
50, so
Yeah.
very exciting, and I still have a little tiny bit of time until I get to 50. Not too
Yep,
long, though.
me too. I got a couple of years. I'm not there. But it was absolutely amazing, and I would go back in a heartbeat, without a doubt. We were away for 18 days altogether between California.
Wow.
Wonderful. My boss wasn't too happy with me taking off that much time, but I made up for it. It was okay.
Yeah, that's not an amount of time I consider
Yeah.
myself taking off at
Definitely
all.
difficult. Yep. So it has to be planned well in advance.
Yeah, absolutely. Do you have any last tips for travelers out there?
Yeah, sure. I think the most important thing is that I think is that travel is just essential for someone's mental health. You have to take the time to, whether it's to get away for a girls' weekend, whether it is to get away for with your family, like a mom and daughter trip, whatever type of trip that you want to do, plan the time to do it, but it doesn't have to be extravagant. It doesn't. Disney vacations are amazing, but it's like you need a vacation from a vacation when you get back, right? Like bucket trips like Hawaii are phenomenal, but take a weekend to just go down to the beach, rent a house, get away from somewhere. I love planning those types of trips as well. I actually like, so I have a Facebook page, and tonight, it was my post tonight. I just booked a trip for a bunch of moms that just want to get away for a weekend. And it's going to be $200 a person to go away for the weekend in this gorgeous 14 bedroom house. And, with all their food and that, with money for food and all that other kind of stuff. So vacationing doesn't have to be always planned out. It can be spontaneous, or it can be planned as well too, but it always, work with whatever works for your budget. I think for me, everyone deserves a vacation, and whatever someone's budget is, I want to be able to work with that person to give them an experience that is helpful for them and for their family. A lot of people, say, well, book a deluxe resort, it's going to be a lot more. Yeah, it's great, but the family can't afford that. That's not fair. Work within your own budget to make sure that you get the time to go away. And I want to, make sure that people know, what are the flight costs? What are those type of things? So you can factor all of those in. And if flights are too much, and wherever you want to go is too much, then we book it further out so we can budget it and just make sure that it works for your family.
Well, thank you so much for being with us today, Amy. I really enjoyed having you here.
Thank you. I really appreciate being here. I mean, honestly, anyone that wants to spend time to talk with me about vacations, it's really never a problem. So thank you.
Awesome. So, if other people want to talk to you about vacations, how can they reach you?
Yeah, absolutely. So I certainly have a Facebook page that is just dedicated to travel. It's just Amy Antrim. So it's just my name, AMY. And then my last name is Antrim, ANTRIM. And then it says an Academy Travel Affiliate after it. Also on Instagram, Amy Antrim Academy Travel is my handle on Instagram. And they can also just reach out to you, and you can give them my cell phone number. Like, it's totally fine. It's all on my Facebook page and my Instagram as well too. I would love to chat with anyone who is interested, and yeah, tell them more about whatever they need to know.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much again. And to everyone out there, remember, go ahead and plan your trip. And this message is for you.